It's that time. It's the Deck the Halls week here on Wandering Nature News. And it made me think about those Christmassy songs and whether we had any actually native hollies in the state of Minnesota. And I found out that we do indeed. We have Ilex verticillata, the winterberry that is native here. Michaela, is that some trivia for you, or did you already know that factoid?
Of course, I knew that. No, I'm just kidding.
Of course.
I have a trivia back at you.
Okay.
Did you know that we have a native mistletoe here in Minnesota?
I might not have known that. What I was wondering was, it's kind of a poisonous plant of sorts, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's parasitic. It causes those witches' brooms up in the spruce trees.
Oh, are you serious? That's what took out my would-be blueberry crop at my homestead. I'm not a big fan, although I appreciate the cool formation up in the fir trees.
Yeah, you'll have to look it up after.
Wow.
But have you seen many winter berries left on the trees?
I don't even know where to look to find a winterberry. I wouldn't know if I saw it.
Sure.
Because if it is a holly, which is what I was looking up, hollies native to Minnesota, the holly plants that I grew up with on the East Coast had pointy leaves that actually poked you when you touched them. I've not encountered any such leaves in my woodland.
I don't think these trees have that talent, shall we say.
Okay, they're not pokey-leaved.
I don't think so. And honestly, when you're going to see the berry, the leaves are not on the tree.
Ah.
So you wouldn't really correlate that in your brain really probably anyway.
It's a red berry, I assume.
Yeah, and
it's a standout.
I've only seen it in Aiken County.
Okay.
And I was just out there and I didn't see any. Not to say that it's still not out, but I think I see it in years of abundance around this time. They're still on the trees. Maybe flocks of birds prefer them. Maybe they'll be foraged at different times of the year. But anyway, also from a foraging perspective, I don't forage any of the branches because the berries just fall right off. But they look really beautiful.
Do they hang in droplets or like racemes, if you know what I mean?
They're
like
just on tiny little, like what you see
twigs.
Like a crab apple.
Okay.
Hanging from, kind of.
So an individual twig per each berry, not,
yeah, but
not a cluster.
But honestly, I don't even think, I'm forgetting the word, the stem is long at all. I think the berries are pretty close to the twig.
Ah, okay. Yes, it was the stem. That was the word I was looking for. And if
yeah.
you're wondering what you're listening to here, you're catching us this informal conversation on Wandering Nature News. We haven't been together, Michaela and I, for a few weeks, and we're just trading trivia, I suppose you'd say, at this supposedly merry time of year. We don't really have the festive white-covered ground down to the lake. I'm sure where you're working at Gooseberry, you're pretty thin on snow.
Thin on snow. Snow's really non-existent. It's more of an ice crust.
Ah.
Yeah, very ice crust everywhere.
We had a little couple inch base in Clover Valley, but it's been wrecked by all of the moisture in the air. It's just mm-hmm. icy everywhere now, and we could use a refresher. Not a blizzard, if you're taking requests out there, Divinity, just a few inches before next Wednesday, December 25th, would be great. I wanted to ask you, Michaela, about overall what you've been seeing, but I did ask you beforehand if you'd comment on the rodent drama. We do feed our bird friends in our woodland homestead, and I have a note from a listener in Clover Valley wondering about the red squirrels in her yard, chasing, hazing each other, really energetic around the feeders and across the woods and open spaces by those feeders. Does that ring a bell? That makes sense?
My thought process would be that I don't know anything about red squirrel behavior, so this is all conjecture.
That's fair.
Are they chasing each other around to establish some territories? Are they play mating? Are they doing something that we see deer do in pre-rut, where they're kind of learning who's bigger, who might be a potential mate, who's a competitor? They're clearly spending a lot of energy running around. I also think that it's pretty warm right now, so that could be adding to some of the energy you see. But yeah, I don't know if it's like courting or if it's territorial or if what you're seeing is caching behavior. If you're
right.
doing a lot of feeding and they're going from the source to the same pile and chasing the same squirrels off every time, well, that to me is saying that they're they're protecting their food cache. They would do that on a nice day anyway because they have the energy to defend.
So once we descend into what we had last week where we had a 25 below night with wind, you think they'll save some of their energy
stores.
They
hole up pretty quick, yeah.
But I think mainly the observer was curious about whether this had to do with when a mating pairing off was going to be happening and or territorial.
Yeah, that happens. They're kind of the first of the early spring maters is squirrels, so that's right around the corner. So it's really hard to tell which squirrels are male and which are female, so I wish we had an answer.
I agree.
So yeah, but that's a good guess. That's probably what they're up to.
But speaking of rodents, I think it was a worthwhile thought that I had to try to catch up with you about I'll call it the beaver saga at Gooseberry Falls State Park. Last year or earlier this year, you told us about the unique location of a beaver in the state park between the waterfalls, I believe. I think I have that right. But anyway, I think you suggested that there was an update that you could give on what's happened there. And I don't know if it's a long story, but can you share some of it?
Sure. We'll do some rock hopping, you know, where you kind of jump from one rock to the next. Starting back, well, really, as soon as I started this position, you know, two full summers ago, I came in at the end of August of 2022 and slowly learned that, yeah, there's beavers around, but, you know, they're upstream somewhere, and, you know, that was kind of it. Well, come the next spring and summer, you know, we had that beaver that fell down the falls, and I just kept hearing was stories of beavers upstream, whether it was, oh, they're chewing down here, or, oh, we saw a beaver up here, we saw a beaver all the way up here, oh, there's a little dam forming up here. So I'm just trying to, like, process, who are these beavers? Are they related? I've just been going down this deep dive. When I started picking up beaver activity on the game camera recently is when I started kind of tracking where they were hauling huge, well, not huge, but very large aspen trees, quaking aspen trees mostly. And this activity of them cutting down trees was really noticeable because it was right off the main path up by the bridge, the catwalk, the waterfalls, upper falls. So it was just right in the middle of everything. It's a very precarious location. And so that's when I'm just like, hold up, where are these beavers living? And how much of the Gooseberry River are they working on right now?
Yeah.
What my recent discovery was I think there's this family. For those of you who have been to the park, Leo, help me out. I think it's probably fair to say that from the mouth of the river, past Upper Falls, even close to Fifth Falls, that's a mile upstream, right?
It would seem at most, yeah. Although there might be some curving that I'm not accounting
right.
for.
Past Upper Falls, there's beaver activity. Still don't know where a lodge is. But I think all this network of cutting on both sides of the river, above Upper Falls, above Fifth Falls, is one family, and they are also working on building a dam across Middle Falls, which is a segment of the river that sits between the huge Middle Falls and this very steep, precarious Upper Falls plunge. And they are cutting down aspen by the old visitor center, hauling it down this really steep cliffside, swimming it down to where the lava flow starts to narrow before it gets over to that big gorge over Middle Falls.
There's so much that's striking about this, but the fact that they're willing to work in almost like mountain climbing conditions.
Oh, it's so slick. I have to crawl on my hands and knees with, you know, hiking boots on to safely get down that cliffside. And it's always damp. There's cedar duff.
Yes. Nothing grippy.
Crumbly basalt. Very crumbly.
Yeah.
Just roots sticking out everywhere. And I've only done it to kind of investigate and then, look for like, I would never recreationally climb down this area. And I try to limit how many times I go down there because
of the impact. Probably.
Of the impact, yeah. And visitors do it a lot. So I try to do it when people don't see me, stuff like that. But literally the beavers are using it so much anyway. But I kind of thought it was all padded down because people used it. It's probably the beavers that have patted it down. Right. And so it's this beautiful landing point under the bridge, which, drumroll please, is where that beaver was living and like nursing itself back to health for a few weeks. People thought it was dead under the bridge.
Right.
No, I think its parents, its family knew that whole riverside. You know, it had access to that little landing area. It had probably been down there before. Now it makes sense why that beaver was on the bank of the river there.
I don't think I ever asked you, would you assess that beaver as being sort of like a yearling or a juvenile of sorts, one that might have been on a normal river system, maybe a less dramatically sloped river system, would have just been going out on its own anyway on a given spring, summer?
I think so.
Okay.
Or it was either dispersing or about to disperse, or as theoretically or statistically, this would be a male beaver that's taking riskier chances in search for its own life. And in that process, it fell down Upper Falls, but it was in its familial territory at that point.
Right.
And then it was able to establish now what I say is beeves domain. And I'm sorry for anthropomorphizing, but like, yeah. Come on, people. I go to the park 5 days a week. I have to like make up stories in my head. Okay, forgive me.
Understood. I was going to say that it wound up in some kind of beaver infirmary.
No, it now what, you know, we believe now it's lived down there now. It's going to be its second winter.
Okay.
I think it lived in the bank of the river the first winter. It's still working on damming up the floodplain area. It possibly has a partner now. People have possibly seen two beavers together. So it's magnificent to see the growth of this damming complex beaver activity web that's funneling river water and nutrients to this area that's very broken from erosion and logging.
I think it goes without saying, but I'll say it because it's just speaks to the imperative that this animal has to do this work. It's doing it right in the midst of where humans are most dense in the whole park. And they're doing it anyway. I mean, so many other creatures might see the bipeds as being the riskiest predator to be around. And apparently the keystone species says, I have a mission and it doesn't matter who's watching.
Well, and they're in the water. They're so in plain sight, but not really.
Right.
We don't think about what lives and moves in the water. And of course, they're out during nighttime a lot as well.
I was going to say, most of the big sawing operations, so to speak, the lumberjack operations are at night.
Yeah, so we share the same space. It's just separated by time.
Yeah.
But their fortitude is what makes me just appreciate them because of what you said. They're right where we go and set up shop and do these things. And they're just like, well, I'm doing it anyway. And I'm a beaver and I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it multiple times. And I'm going to keep doing it.
I hate to once more anthropomorphize, but say this is an inspiring holiday story to me about struggling through adversity to do what you do. Express yourself.
Yeah. And you can be chubby and cute while you do it. So that's great.
Well, that is our happy Christmas tale for this week before Christmas 2024, folks. But I've got naturalist Michaela Rice on hand. They're the person who puts together all of these nifty events that I wanted to make sure I gave you time, Michaela, to share the upcoming events at Gooseberry and or Split Rock. And I think the focus here is going to be on some activities that are coming up in town, in both Duluth
yeah,
and Two Harbors.
Actually, so this is a special, well, we'll start with the Two Harbors Public Library programs. Been having so much fun with these. This week, we're coming up on the 19th and the 20th, the Thursday and Friday of this week. The 19th, I have a wreath making and decoration program, 4:30 to 6. It is kind of a first come, first serve basis on making the wreaths because I just trimmed or pruned some trees that were overcrowded. And so I had a limited, amount of supplies.
Yeah.
But anyway, that'll be in the meeting room. And I have lots of other things to decorate and have fun with as well. So that's this Thursday, 4:30 to 6. And then on Friday, same place, meeting room of the Two Harbors Public Library is my youth program at 1:30. This Friday, we are learning about some unusual critters in Minnesota. the porcupine, the beaver, the possum, and the skunk. And we're going to have a fun time playing trivia. Very upbeat, fun program for an hour on Friday. And then something I'm really excited for, I am partnering with Cafe Sci or Cafe Scientifique.
And
yes, this program, or really an event, is going to be held at Dovetail Marketplace Thursday, January 2nd of, drumroll please, 2025. It's at 6 p.m. And we are talking about the art of observation. I will not stutter on that when I do my presentation.
It's kind of our goal here on Wandering Nature News. So I'm really glad that you're doing this kind of extension work,
well,
so to speak.
Thank you, Leo. So I am kind of a guest speaker at this event, introducing what the art of observation is. So you're giving me some street cred. And we're also talking about nature poetry. And there are some local clubs that have been prompted to prep some nature poetry.
Oh, wow.
So we are having this poetry science community conversation, which, let me tell you, I'm really excited for. So hence the nerves.
So I understand, yeah. the meeting of the worlds that so many people think don't meet, but I think they even have a word for this kind of experience, ekphrastic.
Mm.
Have you ever heard that term?
I'll have to practice it, ekphrastic.
Yeah, E-K.
Okay.
P-H-R-A-S-T-I-C. Okay. I think I have it, but okay. It means bringing together diverse kind of disciplines to create something new. And I might not be totally accurate that you speaking about the art of observation and them reading poetry quite clicks the same way as if you work together with a poet. But that could happen. Who knows what will happen next?
Yeah, well, there will be poets there too. So please come to that event if you are able to get to Duluth. But yeah, next time I'm on air, maybe I can tell you how it went if you can't come see me in person. And gasp, I might have a nature poem to read to you that I myself wrote.
Have you already written this poem, or are you waiting for the inspiration?
No, I have a few poems I've written.
Okay.
Maybe I'll write some more.
Great.
But yeah, I would like to share something.
This is a welcoming and enthusiastic audience for you to try your hand at presenting that, Michaela. We're inviting that.
Okay.
When you feel, okay. The spirit moves.
Okay, with arms wide open, right, Leo?
Wide open.
Awesome.
You know, at this point, we've got to wrap it up, but I wanted to conclude wishing everyone a great holiday. Hope you're able to take part in being out in nature during the holiday. I do hear there might be a weird warm-up towards Christmas Day next week. I would wish everyone a white Christmas if possible. It might not be so. But if it isn't, I hope you can get out, because it'll be kind of warm if it isn't. And we got to take what we get.
Yes. And next time I am going to share with you my owl stories. You know, warning, bird nerd alert. But you guys, I saw my first great gray owl and I want to tell you about it. So,
well, it's a memorable thing. I can't wait to hear. With that, happy holiday to you and yours, Michaela.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm going to be corny. Not only will we see you on the radio, but we'll see you next year.
Yes. Au revoir, Leo.
Buenas noches. Feliz Navidad.
Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho, ho. Ho, 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 ho.
This is Wandering Nature News on KTWH, and we've been speaking with Michaela Rice, naturalist at Gooseberry Falls State Park, and we'll keep you posted when we pick up the Wandering Nature News trail in 2025. This is KTWH.